January 21st, 2009. Thanks for tuning in. Elizabeth here. So happy you could join our show. There's high vibration in the air today, just the day after the historic change of the guards as our new president took office yesterday. Great hope and smiles are returning to people's minds and hearts, not only in our neck of the woods, but I'm sure worldwide. And that is how it should be. It is all according to plan, and you will see after this show why I'm making such a bold statement. If you're new to our show, Earth Harmony's mission statement is quite simple. Let us focus on sharing joy, oneness, abundance, gratitude, and self-awareness at all times. Be ethical and use intuition, not fear. And the most important one, use the currency of love, the only key ingredient for ascension. To find out more about me and my work, please visit my website, redlotus.org, or email me at elizabeth@redlotus.org. First off, let's begin with the abundance intent. Let's take a deep breath. I focus on the holy high self within as the only source of my prosperity. I know this inner presence as the only activity in my affairs, fill in the blank, as it is the substance of all things visible. I trust in the principle of abundance in action within and without, and so it is. Dear friends, the topic of our show today will highlight the evolutionary process of consciousness as we are traveling through day 6 of the galactic age. This timekeeping is the result of years of careful research and study on behalf of a number of great Mayan scholars, among them Carl Johan Kalman and Barbara Hand Clow. We will pick up the conversation with Barbara from last time in September of 08. So to hear the previous interview, please visit the archives at BBS Radio. It is now also uploaded to YouTube and available on podcast. So today I'm honored and humbled to welcome back Barbara Hand Clow, a great guardian of light, international Mayan elder, Cherokee record keeper, and author of 11 books, among others the Mayan Code, which will be the subject of our discussion. We will be making a lot of references to the book by Kalman, The Mayan Calendar and the Transformation of Consciousness, that Barbara edited at her publishing company, Beer & Company. And the Mayan Code is a perfect companion to this book, to the Kalman book, as it shows how the time cycles of the calendar match important periods in evolutionary data banks on Earth and the Milky Way galaxy. These stages of evolution are converging during this final stage of the calendar, the period between 1999 and 2011, just right now. To find out more about Barbara's work and to order her books and the above books mentioned, please visit her website, www.handclow2012.com. We will be referencing a lot of material from these books, so please pick up these books because they're sort of like guidelines or guidebooks on your journey, on a journey you take, and this is basically very helpful for us to navigate through the times we are in at the moment. Welcome back, Barbara. So
hi,
happy
Elizabeth.
You could join me again on such a historic day as today.
Yes, I agree. And can I correct you on one thing in your opening?
Sure.
I was not the editor of Carl Kalman. I stopped working for Bear & Company back in 2001. And so Kalman was a great big personal discovery for me actually in 2005.
Oh, okay. I'm
so sorry. This has been kind of a meeting of two minds, if you know what I mean, two streams coming together where my work is part of his work and his work is part of mine.
I'm sorry about that.
Oh,
okay.
No problem at all.
I understand he gave you a lot of support and okay to
oh,
work
he's fantastic.
On this.
First of all, I had to come to agreement with him in the first place to write a book like The Mayan Code because it's so much based on his work. And he's been one of the most wonderful people I've ever met in my whole lifetime. So,
yes, and
yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned that because,
yeah.
yes, we definitely should honor Coleman and his work because we do talk about him so much.
Yes, and I think the probably the reason I was capable of writing a book as advanced as The Mayan Code is actually because I finally got rid of my job. For 18 years, I had to be a publisher and an author, and it was very tough.
Yes, I
and
believe
Barry
that.
And company is, they're on their own now. Jerry and I have sold the company to Inner Traditions, and they're doing a beautiful job with it, including being smart enough to publish Coleman.
I just received their catalog, and I just can't believe I feel like I need to buy all those books. They are just
yeah, I know.
So incredible.
I know.
Well, thank you so much for accepting my invitation to return to the show again, Barbara.
It's my pleasure.
Last time we talked, if you remember, it was during another Mercury retrograde period in
mm-hmm.
last September. It seems like eons ago, so much happened since then. We finally left the fifth night of the galactic age and are moving fast forward, and in November quickly stepped on to day six of the galactic. So Barbara, how would you summarize this last year's fifth night as it compares to perhaps the other fifth nights of previous underworlds?
Yeah, well, the way we do this kind of research, as you know, is we go back and look mostly in the national and planetary underworlds to see what was going on. And so the most difficult cycle of the 13 heavens, and what I'm referring to is that each one of these nine underworlds is then divided into 13 heavens, which are 7 days and six nights. And so the most difficult stage of all of any underworld is always night five. And in terms of the national underworld, the 5,125-year cycle, that period of time was 434 to 829 A.D., when Europe was in the middle of the Dark Ages. And then in the planetary underworld, which is 1755 to 2011, we're talking about 1932 through 1952, which was the depths of the Depression and the Cold War, and also World War II. So during last year, the galactic underworld, which is 1999 through 2011, has been transmuting and transforming all of the issues that need to be resolved from the national and planetary underworlds. In other words, we're transmuting 5,000 years of history. And so what tends to happen during each one of these days and nights of the galactic underworld is that things come forth which need to be transformed to a new level. And so therefore, night five last year was extremely difficult because we were, remember, after all, we just lived through it. It was really something. It involved the basic tearing up of our financial system and the beginning of the collapse of America's empire, and it's been really something for us to live through that. But now we moved into day six, which is a much more positive period of time.
Yes, these years, each being just one day on this galactic age, zip by very fast. And so what can we expect for this year, for this short year that we're just on day six?
Yeah.
As you mentioned, it started in November.
Mm-hmm, that's right. It started in November, and Kalaman's key word for day six is flowering. And so this is meant to be a time when the processes that have been developed and transformed since 1999 start to blossom. And so I went through all the days and nights previous to day six, of course, in the book. But what I discovered, and it shows an unfoldment and a process that's building. But what I find is the most productive is to go back to the previous day sixes of the previous underworlds in order to understand what might be going on right now. And in this particular case regarding day six, when I went back and did that, and it was actually quite difficult to do that, Kalaman didn't give a lot of that information. And what I found just simply knocked me over. What I found in the previous day sixes was such a clue to why we feel the way we do right now that I'd love to cover those, if you feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the first interesting thing that comes up is that the first underworld is 16.4 billion years long, and it ends in 2011. And, of course, we don't know much about 16.4 billion years of time. And so, as I told you, with every one of these days and nights, I've gone back and looked. And so, to my surprise, the day six of the cellular underworld is the first night or day of the cellular underworld where we have any information. And this is because day six of the cellular underworld occurred 2.5 to 3.8 billion years ago. And so if you go back to 3.8 billion years ago, that's after the planet had accreted from the solar system, and that's after the solar system had formed. And what we find from 2.5 to 3.8 billion years ago is the development of unicellular animals. They're called prokaryotes. And so what we find during day six of the cellular is the actual emergence of the first life forms that later become us. Then if we go into the mammalian underworld is 820 million years long. And as we covered in the previous show, each one of these underworlds is 1/20th in terms of time of the previous underworld. And also, most importantly, each one of these underworlds is accelerating time 20 times faster than the previous one. So okay. if you divide any one of these into the previous one, it's 1/20th, and then time is accelerating 20 times faster. So, of course, I couldn't wait to see what was going on during day six of the mammalian, because the mammalian underworld is the actual evolution of ourselves from unicellular creatures all the way up through complex humans. And so if you go back in the mammalian underworld, it's day six is 126 to 189 million years ago. And that is the period on our planet where Pangaea broke apart and the continent started to form. In other words, this is the period of time where we ceased being one great big landmass and we started breaking into sections called continents. And the other thing that happened during that period was brain lateralization occurred in animals. Now, what that means is that during day six of the mammalian underworld, we had the first development of the right-left brain complex, which, of course, has evolved into us at this point with our complicated right and left brains. Okay? So then, if we get into the familial underworld, which is 41 million years long to 2011, we go back to 9.5 to 6.3 million years ago. And when we go back to 6 to 9 million years ago, what we find is that the first human lineages split from apes and chimpanzees. And this was the period when we stood up, in effect, which, of course, as you can see already, each one of these day sixes involves a radical break and a radical like acceleration in evolution itself. So then if we go back to the tribal underworld, which is 2 million years ago through 2011, if we go to day six, we arrive at 474 to 216,000 years ago. And this was the period of the evolution of Neanderthal, who was the first complex hominid that resembled us in many ways. Okay. Then if we go back into the regional underworld, which is 102,000 years long through 2011, what we find, Elizabeth, is the global maritime civilization. Now, this is the only part of this analysis which is my own research. In other words, I'm saying something here which is not accepted according to conventional research, because Graham Hancock and I and a bunch of other researchers believe that there was an advanced civilization around 20 to 15,000 years ago that then was destroyed in a series of earth changes. And so what I see happening during day six of the regional underworld was the ability of Paleolithic people to develop a maritime civilization that involved actually very pleasant cities and homes right on the edge of the sea until the cataclysm. Then, if we go back to the national underworld, which is 3116 BC through 2011. Day 6 is 829 to 1223 AD. Now this is where it gets really interesting, because what happened during day 6 of the historic or national underworld period is that the Islamic medieval awakening helped bring Europe out of the Dark Ages. In other words, during this extremely influential historical cycle, what got us out of the mess, and I say us because we're talking about kind of a Eurocentric Western point of view, but what brought the West out of nearly losing totally its own civilization was the Islamic Muslim civilization.
So you're talking basically the 14th century, 15th?
This is actually, this happened between 829 to through 1223 A.D.,
and
in other words,
and that was the
time
of great migration, by the way, too.
Well, what happened is first it came into eastern Spain and North Africa, and what happened was the Islamic civilization had maintained a lot of the sacred records and literature that existed at one time in the Alexandrian Library. And the West had lost almost all of this information, including very, very important scientific information as well as artistic information. And so it's really interesting to me that the period we're in now corresponds, at least historically, to a point when the Islamic Muslim civilization really, really had a lot to do with the Western culture being able to save itself, which I think is really kind of significant.
That is an interesting analogy, yes.
I know. You have to wonder what that's going to mean. Needless to say, the election of Obama certainly has a lot to do with resonances with some of these levels we're talking about. And then if we go to the planetary underworld, which is the last underworld before this one, it's 1755 through 2011. The corresponding period is 1952 through 1972. And what happened during that period of time, at least from our point of view, is that America basically became kind of the empire, and America developed a potential global consumerist society during the Cold War. And so this would indicate to me that another very, very big issue that's going to be dealt with this year is the dominance of America and American consumerism. And you notice there's continual tendencies in the last couple of months to try to bring the Cold War back. There's a tendency to try to get it going with Russia again. You notice that?
Yes, I noticed that, yeah.
And that's another resonance here. And yet what's really one of the really exciting things about what Kalman has discovered is that if you understand what he's saying, then you can see that what we're talking about here is clearing something and transforming it and not having it appear in the same way.
Yeah, if I could quote Kalman, if you mention it, he says that the galactic underworld will develop very different phenomena on day 6, often in direct contradiction to those developed by lower planetary underworlds, such as the disappearance of national borders, divinely guided anarchy, and the strengthening of the East. How do you feel about these statements?
I think he's absolutely right. And what's amazing about that is he wrote that back in like probably 2003, and then I came along and was working in 2006 and expressing it in basically the same way with other ideas attached to it. And it really is remarkable how what he was able to see is playing itself out at this point. It's really remarkable.
And yet we call day 6 the age of rebirth. So how do you anticipate this rebirth will take shape?
Well, then what I did with that, because, again, a few years ago when I had to try to envision that, that's where I got into the issue of exopolitics. Because when I got into day 6 and I viewed the planet a few years ago and the condition that it was in, the only thing that I could imagine, and let's go back a little bit, if we look at what I found in the other day 6s of the earlier underworlds, each one of those occurrences during day 6 is a radical step forward. And it's the kind of step forward that when you're in the middle of it, you can't see what's going on, and you can't imagine where it could be headed. But something happens to completely transform patterns that have been stuck in place for a long, 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 long time. And the only thing that I could imagine that might occur was the issue of exopolitics. Now, exopolitics is an invention of a scientist, Alfred Lavermont Weber. And basically, he sort of invented it as kind of a political system. But in my own work in channeling in the Pleiadian agenda, I had come up with the same conclusion about maybe 20 years ago or something like that, which is basically that the Earth has been quarantined from the universe, and Alfred calls it universe society, which I think is a nice term. And the basic idea is that we've been quarantined from the universe as a whole because we've become a very, very violent and aggressive and destructive species. So first of all, it was a perfect thing for me to get into because I'm the author of Catastrophobia. And Catastrophobia came out in 2001, and the basic theme of Catastrophobia is the investigation of a great planetary catastrophe 12, 13,000 years ago that made us into a very wounded and traumatized species. In other words, I'm saying in Catastrophobia that we weren't always the way we are now, and when you get into the beauty of the global maritime civilization as we understand it, what happened to us is we got knocked back and we became a traumatized species, and then gradually we became very violent, especially during the national underworld during the last 5,000 years. And so what I'm saying is that what we're in the middle of right now, the most important work that we're doing right now, is transmuting all of those elements of our woundedness, all of the fear, all of the past memories, all of the violent tendencies. Because as soon as we're able to do that, and Obama is such an incredible leader for this, as soon as we're able to do that, then Alfred Weber believes that we're going to be invited back into the universe and become part of universe society again and not be quarantined from the rest. And so that was the only thing that I could imagine back in 2006 that could possibly explain taking a step like this in this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was going to ask you about the quarantine. I thought that perhaps we're leading up into that possibility by 2011. So you feel it could be happening sooner than that?
Well, what the Mayan code says is that it's going to be lifting all the way from the summer of 2008 through 2011. And I just been sitting back watching for signs. But specifically, I said that I thought the biggest shift was going to occur during day six. And the amazing thing about that is that that has already turned out to be true.
It's true. It feels like this huge veil is lifted from us.
You can feel the lifting of the veil. And you can see Obama is an extremely spiritual person.
Yes.
No, I'm a seer.
He's a master number 11.
Yeah, I'm a seer. You know, I watch people's energy, and I'm sure you do the same thing. And when I observe him, I can see a complete flow from spirit right through the top of his head, right through his body. And then what I've been watching him do for the last 2 years since he's been visible to us is he never misses a beat because he's completely guided by spirit.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and watching him during that inauguration and also the mastery of the inauguration, because one of the most amazing things that went on there was that supposedly the swear on the Bible is supposed to occur at exactly 12 noon. Okay, that's all based on the fear that if there's 1 second between the departure of the old president and the arrival of the new president, that the country could fall apart, right?
Really?
Which is, you know, that's all based on that. That's a Masonic thing, which, of course, is ridiculous, number one. And most importantly, it establishes a fear paradigm.
Yeah.
So you know what Obama did during that inauguration?
Why?
He had that beautiful string quartet by Copland being played.
Uh-huh.
And the Copland piece went from about 5 of 12 until 5 after 12.
Uh-huh.
And I swear,
you feel that was intentional, or he was just guided to do
that?
Oh,
they scripted it. See, he was in charge of scripting that.
Okay.
So we have to assume that the various things, that, like that incredible poem after Obama finished his speech.
Wow.
Like, how could they have ever found anything that could be said after he said what he said? And yet she just took that right to the heart of the feminine and right into the total opening of the heart.
Yeah, that's another
awesome.
Another huge topic about how the goddess of rebirth is really ruling this age or this day, and how the feminine power is increasing.
Yeah.
And you mentioned earlier it's called flowering, or this is called Heaven 11.
Yeah.
How would you elaborate on that?
Well, the flowering, of course, is simple in terms of just what happens. You know, we start with the tree and sowing the plant and all that, the tree of life, and then finally the tree of life flowers. So that's a fairly simple analogy. But to tell you the truth, judging by all these previous day sixes, it's impossible to even see what's going on right when you're in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And so the other thing that has just happened is that in the Mars Anomaly research group, which is working, this is a group that works with all those issues of the face on Mars and all of that stuff and the Cydonia complex. And I don't know about you, but I've been furious for about the last 20 years about not being allowed to have that information and having NASA block the people of Earth from the fact that there is face on Mars, staring at us through space, and a civilization made that face, okay? But then what has just happened is another researcher, a man named Andrew Basiago, has just started publishing information about another series of photos on Mars that actually show like things that look like statues. There seems to be a very large skull. There seems to be humanoid creatures, kind of carved statues. And those photos are all available at this point and exopoliticsradio.com,
okay,
if anybody wants to. Exopolitics.
Yeah, I'll check that out. Yeah, I've been reading all kinds of stuff about the moon and the dark side of the moon and what's going on there.
Yeah, and in this case it's on Mars. There's also Hoagland and Barra's book on the moon, which is just incredible, called, I don't know what it's called exactly, Secret something, but that's also an incredible piece of information that came out last year, which has just been completely suppressed. And I'd like to give you a key here as to how they managed to get away with suppressing it. Because, first of all, they do it with their media and with their bull, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But they've also got a very clever plug-in here that I'd like to just pull right out right now.
Okay.
Which is, if you study Hoagland and you study, it's called Dark Mission, you study these books, they always talk about how this civilization, these remnants of this civilization on Mars and the Moon, come from more than 3 million years ago. Now, this is impossible. There is no way that the things, the artifacts and things that they have discovered could be from 3 million years ago because of the asteroids and comets and debris in the solar system. It's simply impossible. And there's a big cover-up on the cataclysm, which, of course, I covered in Catastrophobia. And, of course, I know there's a big cover-up on the cataclysm because what goes on all the time is a constant cover-up. And the facts are that cataclysm did happen, and the cataclysm affected the whole solar system. The cause of it was fragments that came from the Vela supernova into our solar system between about 13,000 and 12,000 years ago. And what happened is the whole solar system was affected. The different planets are tilting at strange angles and all that. And what happened at that point was Mars lost its atmosphere and the civilization was destroyed, and whatever was on the moon was also destroyed. And so what I'm getting at, Elizabeth, is what they do is by moving the issue back to 3 million years ago, they destroy the whole argument, if you see what I mean.
Yes,
I do. Yeah, there's a really clear history that's available through geology, through cosmology. There's no doubt that what I'm talking about is true. And yet I live, of course, with the constant cover-up on what I do because, you know, and I'm just an astrologer, right? And I'm just a, you know, a researcher, if you know
what
I mean.
Yeah. Well, Barbara, since you're mentioning NASA, you in the last conversation we had, you mentioned the 1998 event of during winter solstice, our sun moved into alignment with the plane of the galaxy.
Yeah.
Now, close to this past winter solstice, I'm sure you know this, another NASA finding came out which reported a giant breach in Earth's magnetic field.
Yeah, right.
And so this is a huge event. Of course, they didn't even mention it in mainstream news, I don't think. But we know about that, and it's such a huge opening. It's 10 times the size of the Earth.
That's right.
What do you make of that?
Yeah, and it's interesting. This occurred, I think it was last July.
Well, they reported it on December 16th, which is just close to the winter solstice. I thought it happened then. But
yeah, that's another one. This is occurring down by the, I forget the name of those islands down there, but it's occurring in the Atlantic, and it's occurring over the Atlantic. And, you know, there's definitely a very, very big issue there, and we're certainly not being given our information.
Don't you think this is some sort of an opening from higher dimension that could download other things to us? Not necessarily a negative event like some people are suspecting that, okay, if this happens, then the solar flares are definitely opening up more possibilities to disturb our magnetic shield in the future, and we could see tremendous disturbances, you know, in terms of, you know, our electricity and everything else.
Yeah, I'm looking for a quote here because I had an interesting quote about that. I've got a couple of pieces of paper here. Let's see if I can find it.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're having a great discussion on the Mayan Code with author Barbara Handclaw. Please visit her website for much more information on today's subject and on the incredible life work of Barbara Handclaw at www.handclaw2012.com. And feel free to call in with questions if anyone is listening and wants to ask her any questions on any of these subjects or other subjects of her book.
Okay, I found it.
Okay.
So let's go back to the sun, because this is the big issue, actually, 2008 through 2012 for sure. And in the Mayan Code, I said that the Earth changes, consciousness changes, and weather changes that the sun will cause will be truly cataclysmic between 2008 through 2010. And then I got into the issue of solar flares. But what happened during 2008, and it's happening at this current moment, is the sun has been completely blank. There were like seven tiny little solar flares last year when normally there would be a couple of hundred. We're in a low period of solar activity right now. But that's different than the sun going blank. And the last time the sun went blank was a period right around 1650. And once the sun went blank, the Earth went into what's called the Little Ice Age. And so when the solar flares go down to the degree that they've gone down this year, it does definitely create a radical cooling of the planet. Now, this is really interesting in terms of the issue of global warming. You know, in other words, I think something we need to understand right now is that our planet has just incredible ability to balance itself from a cosmological as well as geological point of view. It's just this planet and the systems and the ocean currents and all that. It's just fantastic. And one of the things that, and this is probably the only time you'll ever hear me say I believe, okay, because I don't say that very often, but I do believe that we are divinely guided. I don't need to talk about God or anything like that, although people can. All I need to do is look at the evolution and the processes that we're in the middle of. And it looks like we're evolving very fast to the point where we are a species that can actually contemplate its own history and its own evolution. And this is what's happening, of course, with Kalaman's work and then with my contribution to it. And if we get into indigenous teaching, what happens to a species or a clan or a group of people is if they lose their story, then they're going to be destroyed. And so what's happening right now is our story is coming back to us. And the reason I get so, you know, angry sometimes about the distortion of the data is because sometimes I feel like imagine a medieval castle, and then imagine one of those catapulting machines, those catapulting weapons where they keep trying to heave stones over the wall, you know?
Uh-huh.
Well, sometimes that's what I feel about this body of research.
Uh-huh.
And so another really positive thing that happened about a month ago is that a group of scientists just published a whole bunch of information that backs up catastrophobia. Uh-huh. And this was a discovery of, did you hear about the discovery of nano diamonds? This was a great discovery. These scientists call it Diamond Rain.
Wow.
And the head of this research, this is just published in Science magazine, and James Kennett is the head of this project, and they just presented very, very incredible new evidence for an event that occurred between 12,900 to 11,500 years ago, which was the extinction of the large species on the planet. So one of the things that is definitely going on here, even though sometimes I just could lose it, I get so frustrated, you know, is that the edifice that's blocking us from our story is being broken down.
Yes, it's coming down, yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, Coleman again mentions that to become real at this time in age, the galactic age, the energy, the Christ consciousness energy, which you call Christ consciousness, he calls it Quetzalcoatl, it must manifest in human beings. So at this time, what's happening is through the absorption of the light energy on the right brain and and the light energy unifying in the left brain will activate the Kundalini energy in us. And this is like the winding energy of light in our bodies that's manifesting. So, Barbara, is this really what you're talking about? That's what's really taking place right now?
Yeah, and what's incredible is to have the leader, you could be, I mean, I hate the whole issue of America being the leader of the world, but that's just what's going on. People look to us that way, and that's the story. And Obama is an enlightened human being. In other words, what do I mean by that? Well, what I mean is his clearance of his emotional issues and his mental issues, and he may have been enlightened all along. I mean, we don't know the answer to that. But when you see the spirit flowing through his crown and in through his system and then flowing out of him in relationship to people that he relates to, we actually have a leader who is embodying enlightenment publicly every day on the planet.
Yeah, I feel he is very symbolic in this left and right analogy because, of course, he's part, part African and part white, and that also kind of unifies that left and right light brain.
Yeah, that's true. You know, something you just made me think of, I think it's really a really astute insight on your part, is, you know, Kalamana has all that wonderful energy, information about the planet being like a skull.
Yeah.
And like seeing through the front side through the eyes. But then when you get into the back side of the skull, what you hit at that point is Hawaii.
Interesting.
Yeah, I know. And so it's interesting that Obama was born in Hawaii,
Honolulu. Yeah, he uses this analogy of West corresponding with the left brain and the East corresponding with the right brain. So could this mean that we are headed for a peaceful coexistence between East and West? Could that be also significantly happening on day six?
Boy, this is a really important one. And so when I come to questions like that, now, first of all, I wrote that I thought that would be happening between 2008 and 2011, and I saw significant evidence for it beginning last August. We're talking about the entry into the fourth world. But then the only thing that I have left to use is astrology. And, of course, I am an astrologer, and I publish new moon and seasonal analysis on my website. Excuse me, on my website for free. I started doing that back in 2003 because my students were screaming at me because they wanted to call me or email me, and I just kept saying I can't do it. And so then what I decided to do was just publish a free astrological analysis so that they could read it. And then what happened, and now it's gone out to millions of people, which I didn't expect. But what that created for me was that forced me to start doing this month-by-month, season-by-season analysis, which is attempting to use astrology to understand how these Mayan calendar cycles might be unfolding. And so regarding the current moment, the Aquarius new moon is January 26th and 27th, and I've never seen such astonishing astrology in terms of higher frequencies coming to this planet.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's really amazing.
Because I was just amazed at December alone, you know, with the new moon there, and then with the winter solstice, that was very, very dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine from that winter solstice, you always say that from a winter solstice, huge things can be born out of that. So
that's right.
We're going to go into a major shift again.
Yeah, and yet what happened during December also was the new moon was December 27th in December, and
right.
It was the Capricorn new moon.
Right.
And it's one of the few new moons I've had to read where the energy was so bad that I almost had to say it was bad energy. Because, see, I just don't do that. I look at the whole thing, and I look for the positive things, and then I look for ways to deal with anything that's difficult, and I just don't put out a lot of negativity. So I did the analysis for the December new moon, and quite a few of my students contacted me and said that this was the best job they'd ever seen of not saying something bad about something awful.
Yeah, yeah.
but what happened is if you go back to December 27th, which is 2 days after Christmas, what happened was this incredible compaction force came in, which forced most of us to really face a difficult issue or maybe a couple of difficult issues that had been holding us back for years, but we've been trying to avoid.
Uh-huh.
You know, and not everybody experienced this, of course. But what I found is I just found the energy was just incredibly heavy. Maybe just because I had a big issue that I had to face that I finally dealt with, which was my sister. You know, for each one of us, it's something different.
It's something different, but on
yeah.
a global scale, of course, that's when the Gaza conflict happened.
Yes,
again.
It did. That's
yeah.
right. Thank you. Yeah, the Gaza conflict broke out right on that day. And one of the things that I'm doing in the Aquarius new moon is going to take all of that compaction and kind of a kneeling force, and it's just going to take it to a very, very high level of potential. And so one of the things I'm saying in the Aquarius new moon analysis, which I'm just about to send off, is that one of the things that Obama should do starting in a few days now is he should start dealing with the issue of American support for Israel. Now, this is a hot potato, you know, because what's going on in the Middle East, for instance, with Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, is that what they're saying is that it's not that they're against Israel, they're against American support and other countries tipping the balance to such a degree that it disbalances the whole or unbalances the whole Middle East. And so the astrology is showing a need to come to some sort of new conclusion about that. You know, not to abandon Israel, that's not what we're talking about here, but to come to some kind of balance. And so I'm hoping what we're going to see here is possibly a Middle East conference with all of the countries included. In other words, get rid of this, you can't come and you can't come because you're a bad guy. Let's get everybody to talk.
Let's hope so. Yeah. So that could be a good event for day six, because Kalman sometimes talks about that the days usually signify wars more so than the nights. However, on day six, we're basically beyond the fifth night, so it would be hard to imagine more war continuing.
Yes, I agree. And yet at the same time, of course, just as Kalman says, it did break out at that point.
Uh-huh.
Because it was, and why did it break out? Because it's not resolved.
It was a last-minute effort somehow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So you don't necessarily feel that could continue.
If it continues, we're lost.
Yeah.
I mean, the next stage of evolution that is coming in 2011 is for us to become a peaceful species and to begin to be part of universe society. If we continue to be quarantined, and if we continue to sit around and kill each other on this planet, that's going to be the end of us.
I heard that the Saudis want to throw a bunch of money at this conflict, and they want to rebuild Gaza. They want to spend, like, I don't know how many billions and totally rebuild the city.
Yeah, I think they're planning on sending $2 billion in aid, because, as you know, the situation is very dire. The suffering is just incredible.
And they want to rebuild the entire city, which
yeah.
they, I'm sure they can afford to do that.
Well, otherwise, where are the people going to go? To Saudi Arabia?
You know?
So, in other words, we've come to the end point on this, and we can't go on like this anymore. And the Middle East is the vortex,
yeah.
especially in Jerusalem. And I really feel that if these problems aren't solved, you know, we're not going to make it.
So
you know, another thing, Elizabeth, is that speaking of this is a good one. Speaking of the civilization that was destroyed probably 12,000 years ago on the moon and Mars, another reason that I would like to have the people of the world understand that a civilization existed on Mars and the moon and it was destroyed is that if they can face the fact that it could happen to the moon and Mars, maybe they'll start to realize it could happen to Earth.
Yes.
Because it's going to unless this stops. The Pleiadians are adamant. They just keep on saying over and over again, if humans don't stop killing themselves, they will cease to exist.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you talk about very well about the different dimensions in your book, and you one of my friends just mentioned this yesterday. He goes, all I want to know, he says, is, and in fact, he probably would have liked to call in, who is helping us? Who is inspiring the spiritual side of what's happening on planet Earth, on, you know, to us?
Yeah.
And my answer was, from your book, it would be from the 11th dimension, or is it the 9th?
Ninth dimension.
That's where our creators, so to speak, are. Correct.
Yeah, actually, this is all Pleiadian information, and they say that the divine force or God actually exists in the eighth dimension, and then that consciousness creates sound, which is very much like the Bible, where the Creator creates the world with sound, and then the sound creates the geometry, and then the geometry creates the love. You know, it goes through those levels. And the most interesting thing about the Pleiadian agenda, and I say interesting because I channeled it, and it took me 10 years to understand the book because it has so many astonishing pieces of information in it. And, of course, I investigated that in Alchemy of Nine Dimensions. I actually prefer Alchemy of Nine Dimensions because it's a scientific analysis of the dimensions. But at any rate, what the Pleiadians said back in 1995 is the ninth dimension is time, and the ninth dimension is Zolk'in. Well, of course, I knew what Zolk'in is. Zolk'in is the 260-day mind, you know, the day calendar of the Maya. And so, but I couldn't imagine what they were talking about, and I didn't figure it out until I ran into Kalaman's work. And I believe that what the Pleiadians were showing is that evolutionary force coming from the world tree and working through the nine underworlds is the dimension that then informs God consciousness about evolution on the planet, which is really, it's putting time and the calendar at a higher dimension than divine consciousness.
So on page 188, of course, you're saying that what we're really here to do is become responsible keepers as humans of the third dimension.
That's
right. Really what we're being prepared to become.
That's right.
Do you feel like we're really accomplishing that?
Well, you know, if I go back to when I was in college, there wasn't a single school where I could have taken a course in ecology. You know, and then by the time my kids went to school, basically that was the thing that most of them wanted to study. So I do think that there are a lot of signs that humans are becoming more conscious all the time and more aware of themselves as keepers. But the other piece of the puzzle that we're dealing with right here is that another thing that is being transmuted right now is the planetary underworld. And the planetary underworld is 1755 through 2011 AD. And it's the time acceleration in the middle of the historical cycle. And it's the period when we developed industrialization. And so what I have finally concluded about the planetary underworld is that the planetary underworld is actually a search for comfort. And the midpoint of the planetary underworld is 1883, which was when we had all these great Victorian houses and all these amazing trains and all this beautiful antique furniture. It's not antique then. But the peak of that level of comfort was back in 1883 with, you know, the Age of Oil starting, and people had flush toilets and interior heating and all that kind of stuff. And so one of the things that I think has happened is that we needed to build up our level of comfort by developing consumerism and developing an easy life. And I actually think that the reason we needed to do that from an evolutionary perspective is we needed to experience comfort and safety in order to start moving beyond the problem with being a mass traumatized species. And so I think what's going on right now is I think we've done that, we've experienced it, and I think we're definitely moving to another level. But the difficult thing is, it's so hard to imagine what it's going to be. It has to be alternative technologies. It has to be a more enlightened way. And so when I go back to my own work with the issue of the first dimension, second dimension, and third dimension, and so on, nine dimensions, one of the things that comes through in the Pleiadian agenda and an alchemy of nine dimensions is that each one of these dimensions actually has an incredible creative force that's operating. And somehow we've got to move to the point where we use the second dimension, which is the telluric realm. It's the realm under the surface of the Earth to the iron core crystal. And if you think about it, the telluric realm is filled with oil and chemicals and minerals. And I think that we've got to make peace with the second dimension and work with the energy of the second dimension instead of just using it and burning it up in the atmosphere.
Yes. You know. Yes. And I believe the second dimension also is the dimension for our animal kingdom, isn't it?
For the what?
Animal kingdom?
Actually, no. Animals are very much in the third dimension.
Third dimension?
Yeah, and animals, by the way, are very multidimensional.
Okay.
Yeah, animals are actually really almost more multidimensional than humans.
Wow.
And the reason for that is animals don't have, aren't trapped in the fourth dimension. Now, what's
okay.
the fourth dimension? Well, the third
dimension...
Do you
feel we are trapped in fourth right now?
Yes. Yeah, the issue is we're supposed to be in the third dimension with the animals.
Uh-huh.
And they're supposed to be the keepers of our clans, and we're supposed to have a relationship with their intelligence. But because of the media and because of the speed-up of time during the planetary underworld, the last 250 years, what's happened to us is we've gradually gotten ourselves caught in the fourth dimension. And the fourth dimension is the collective mind, the realm of archetypes. And what it does is we're living in a media-infused archetypal collective realm instead of being grounded in the third dimension.
Yes,
you see how that
yes.
works?
Yes, yes.
So animals and have an easy life because, you know, your dog isn't thinking about the war in Iraq, if you know what
yes.
I mean.
Especially here in the West, of course, people are so entrenched in the material trapping still that this shift will, like you mentioned in your last, in our last conversation, it's going to be more hard on those who live in the West,
yeah,
because the trappings are heavy. What would be your recommendation for listeners who are trapped in a lot of fear going on still?
Yeah, it's a really big issue, and you're never going to get any place if you're coming from fear. And one of the things that's been so hard for people is that the Bush-Cheney regime, of course, ratcheted up the fear principle to the maximum so they could pull their dirty little tricks while nobody was looking. And I think Obama has started right out by signaling he's moving beyond fear. He got out there and walked right in the streets. He played a string quartet. We were all supposed to be all freaked out about Bush leaving and Obama coming in. There wasn't supposed to be a second between the transition from one to the other. And instead, Obama set up a situation where a string quartet, beautiful music, just transmuted Bush, who was sitting right there behind him with his feet under the podium, basically, behind Obama. And it just moved it right out.
Well, that's just evoking the ninth dimension then, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so in terms of personal advice to people, issues of what do you do as an individual, right now you're moving very quickly into survival issues. And people, and I said this, of course, a couple of years ago, and nobody was listening, but now people are listening because the financial system is collapsing. And there's no problem with working with the issue of survivalism as long as you move into community. And so, you know, there's all these empty houses that nobody could sell, can sell, and people start need to live together. You know, you have one old lady in a 4,000 square foot house, and she needs to move a couple of her friends in.
That's right.
In order, you know, to keep on going here. And so we're going to be rapidly propelled into developing community again. And Obama's going to be a great leader for that.
I hope, yes.
He understands that.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, he lived in Jakarta when he was a young boy. Have you ever been to Jakarta?
Mm.
It's about the scariest place I've ever been to in my life, except maybe Bombay 20 years ago. You know, he knows what it takes to live under the most dire circumstances, and so he's got the skills that you need in order to lead the country in this direction.
Barbara, do you have any new channeled ideas that you came across lately, or besides, you know, what's happening in our arena here, but from the beyond, because I know you've done a lot of work with different dimensions lately.
Yeah, I would say that right now what I'm doing is I'm actually really channeling all of my channel powers right through the new moon and seasonal astrology combined with Kalaman's definition as a background. So I'm kind of like using those powers, you know, month by month on Handclaw 2012 and then for seasonal analysis. And then other than that, to tell you the truth, I'm just trying to take it easy because this is unbelievable. I mean, you know, like my husband and I are doing really well, but we have to help our kids constantly because they're living in a world, you know, where there's no opportunities for them.
Yes, our children taking the brunt of it. It was such an honor, Barbara. I feel deeply blessed that we could talk today again. And I wish you and Jerry an early happy birthday. Fabulous vacation next month. I understand you're visiting Hawaii.
Yeah, and we're actually going to teach a workshop. We called up the local center, and they said, hey, come on. So we're going to teach on Maui in case anybody hears this.
Oh, you are? Oh, yeah. I wish I could be there.
I've never been there. I can't wait.
Wonderful. I've been there in 2000.
Uh-huh.
Long time ago, it seems. But, well, and have a wonderful, beautiful new day six, and enjoy every minute of it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Okay. Again, dear friends, please visit Barbara's website for more information on today's subject and on the incredible life work of Barbara Handclaw, and check out her Astro Flash, which I check out every month for its new moon and full moon information. Very informational. And the website, again, is www.handclaw2012.com. Friends, let's finish with closing gratitude intent. Take a deep breath. I'm grateful, and I know now that there is nothing that I could truly desire that is not at this very moment standing at the door of my consciousness, ready to appear in my life and affairs. I have only to be conscious of this truth, and every need is met, every problem solved, every question answered. My consciousness of the holy high self within is all I will ever need for all eternity. And so it is. Dear friends, our next live show will air on Wednesday, February 4th, 2009, at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern. We will have time to discuss the Chinese New Year, which technically begins this next new moon on January 26th, and I will give you my predictions for the year of the Earth Ox in great detail. Please mark your calendars for another important discussion. You can also check my web pages for details on upcoming shows. Visit the Earth Harmony Archives if you missed any of our programs. I'm in the process of uploading all my current and past live shows. Select shows on my website, redlotus.org. Thanks for joining me today. I'm Elizabeth, checking out. Until we meet again next time, have a blessed, love-filled, abundant 2009, everyone. Blessed be. Each heart is a helper, each one.